up for talking nonsense.
Who's up for talking nonsense? Who are you?
I'm sorry. I got confused. I thought that you were jumping right into your special segment this week.
No.
But I forgot that it's coming along. I'm the American Jezebel.
And I'm the Greasy Rapidian, and we're going to talk some nonsense today.
Let's start with our sponsor.
Our sponsor. Okay. Well, and we have a little trivia. A sponsor, because you know how we love to put music in.
Yeah, if it's... our actual professional music by Kevin MacLeod.
At Incompetech.com.
Oh, he does some great work.
Thank you, Kevin, for your work.
For your actual professional work. You're not just us making weird sounds into the microphone.
Okay, well, this is going to be way better than Trope Watch and all kinds of other things. Oh. So I got a little Breaking Away tribute sponsor music.
Okay.
Okay, are you ready? I had $2, but I needed $3 to have a lift. Take me to the AMP. I had $7, but I needed $8 to buy 2 bars of Tony's chocolate. This is brought to you by Tony's Chocolate, which they're selling at the AMP in Bloomington, Indiana now. So let me tell you a little something about Tony's. Tony's, right now, slaves are working on cocoa farms in West Africa. Many of them are children. Tony's Chocolonely exists to change that. Their vision is 100% slave-free chocolate. Not just their chocolate, but all chocolate worldwide. With incredibly tasty chocolate, which it is, they lead by example and show the world chocolate can be made differently in taste, packaging, and the way we treat cocoa farmers. Alone, they have made slave-free chocolate. Together, all of us can make all chocolate 100% slave-free. So, they ask us to join them. The more people that choose slave-free and share Tony's story, the sooner 100% slave-free becomes the norm in chocolate. The choice is yours. Are you in? Here at Talking Nonsense? We are in.
We are in.
This week's episode is brought to you by Tony's Chocolonely 51% Dark Chocolate Almond Sea Salt. It was really good.
You have to atone for how you treated Tony's last week.
I treated you poorly last week, Tony.
I did.
Ugh. I'm so sorry. So I am atoning for it and atoning for it.
Oh, that's bad.
It's going to be a long episode. Oh. It's going to be a long episode.
Starting rough.
All right. So I've got to adjust my mic, Joe Rogan style.
Even this week, you sang Tony a song. I think he'll appreciate it.
I think he will. And I think he'll appreciate that I actually went out of my way to tie it in with the movie and really give him some kind of appreciation. So thank you, Tony, for the chocolate and helping out, making the world a better place.
Thanks, Tony.
This week, we watched
Breaking Away. This was the first time I had ever seen Breaking Away. Fresh eyes on the movie. So just like last time, when it was also my fresh eyes peeping on that movie that I had never seen before, we'd like to bring back our new recurring segment. Every time we have not seen the movie, we're gonna have to go into the studio. We're getting real fancy in the studio here. We are Joe Roganing it up here. We got 2 mics in the studio now. So all you Debbies
no
out there.
No turntables, 2 microphones.
But all you Debbies out there who've been complaining about our audio quality, we got 2 mics now.
We're hoping that the audio quality on this episode.
Best ever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you cackle over there.
No, I can cackle all I want, and I'm looking to cut it out. And we'll balance it so there isn't overly ear-piercing cackling coming from one of us. Because we have been described as one cackler and one expert.
Yeah, like it should be.
Just like it should be.
Yeah, in a long line of radio personalities.
Of radio duos.
Yep, famous radio duos.
And if the formula works, stick with it.
Yeah.
Get yourself a cackler.
Yep.
And an expert.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
No need to work with this.
So cackle away over there on your microphone today. So, Breaking Away. We're already getting distracted by the nonsense.
Let's have a little theme music. Shh. And we're going to do American Jezebel Says What? Shout out to Amber Ruffin. We are ruffians.
Oh, ruffians forever. We love you.
What? What?
much better song than the one you wooded last time.
Okay, let's hear. Let's hear have some theme music and we'll hear from the American Jezebel saying what?
So welcome back to What Is This Movie About? I'm excited for the Greasy Rapidian to make his predictions about what he thinks future movies is about, because so far it's only been me. So this movie, Breaking Away, I have not seen it. My guess, well, all I know about the movie is that it takes place in Indiana, and I think it's about a bunch of boys that live in a college town, but they don't go to the college. They're like the townies in the town, and they get really into bike racing. I'm going to say this is not a movie that will pass the Bechdel test. I think that there's going to be no women in this movie, and I think it's going to subvert our expectations somehow, because it's not going to be about a triumphant bike race at the end, even though it's about biking. Those are my predictions.
All right.
Now, those were my predictions before I saw the movie, and I was 100% right on everything. All of it was correct.
It's as if you had written the movie yourself.
I'm like a movie psychic. It's like I just feel all of the plots out there in the universe. Even if I haven't seen the movie, 100% correct on my predictions.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let me read the description, if I may.
Please do. Yeah. We want to know what does the internet say that this movie is about? I know that I just accurately predicted everything that was going to happen in the movie, but what did Google say this is about?
Well, and again, we did not watch this on our future sponsor, Netflix.
Come on, Netflix.
We're having to shell out money to watch these on other sites that will not be named.
Nope.
And so the other site that will not be named, it did not have a description. So we're reading it off the with the World Wide Web, because mm-hmm. we've been listening to the Slow Burn podcast shout out right away.
Oh, here we are, the podcast multiverse.
Some music.
We also love you, Leon Nafak.
About Baratunde? Are you shouting him out this time?
I know, because maybe he's listening to this episode.
Okay.
Please. Wow, we're actually building the threads of the podcast multiverse as we speak.
We are. We're connecting those neural networks.
I actually met a real life podcaster, a professional podcaster, somebody who gets paid for it and doesn't just have future sponsors.
Well, we have one real sponsor.
We do.
You'll hear from them at the end of the episode as usual.
But you did meet one. I did meet an actual professional podcaster. Got paid by 23andMe. That's some real podcast cred right there.
Yeah, that is a good sponsor.
Yeah.
But did he sing to them?
But is 23 and have we proved that 23andMe is slave-free DNA sequencing?
We have not. But I would just like to point out that I did my 23andMe, and it did come out that I was 72% twisted steel and 28% sex appeal. So I don't trust it, because I think the sex appeal should have been much higher.
Yeah, that's like, a lot of twisted steel.
That's a lot of twisted steel and not a lot of sex appeal. Mm-hmm. It should be much higher.
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if I'm sorry. I don't think that I'm the person to weigh in on that.
I know. Well, when I was with my mom today, she wouldn't know part of the nonsense either. So she did not weigh in on how much sex appeal I have in my DNA.
Again, we have a very specific audience that actually, like, I think... actually likes the nonsense part of this.
Yeah.
Some people just wade through the nonsense to get to our perfect points that we always come up with about these movies.
Yeah, which we'll get back to when we come to the agree to disagree segment.
Yes.
All right, so let me read you a little bit about Breaking Away, the 1979 movie. And so that's not in the reading, but here we go. Dave and his working class friends, Cyril, Moocher, and Mike, spend their post-high school days in Bloomington, Indiana, sparring with snooty students from the local university, chasing girls, and in Dave's case, dreaming of competitive bike racing. The four friends face opposition from all corners as they decide to make Dave's dream come true in the university's annual bicycle endurance race. There you go.
That was a more detailed description than we often get.
That was quite a bit more detailed. That was
detailed.
That was no intern.
No.
Okay. And,
yeah.
And how do you think that lines up with the movie?
I think it's fairly accurate. There's some accurate points in there.
Mm-hmm. I think the last part is inaccurate.
Yes.
The four friends do not try to make Dave's dream come true.
Because it's not his dream to win that race.
No, and actually they want him to win the race for them so they can show the snooty college kids who's who.
Yeah.
So that's not Dave's
dream.
That's
not true. The snooty college kids, a lot of them were kind of snooty.
They were.
That was true. They were four working class friends.
They were. That's true. And
they
were in their
post
high
school. Yeah. There was some real accuracy
in there.
Yeah,
except for the last.
The last part was not true. He did race in the race, but it was not his dream to race that race.
It was not.
No.
No. So they weren't making his dream come true.
Mm-mm.
And people are waiting to hear what we have to say about the movie because they are so aligned with us.
I know.
Zero agree to disagrees.
Wow, we nailed it last week.
We crushed it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It was like just a perfect analysis of Stand By Me.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had any issues with it.
Nope. It was
it's kind of funny what people do take issue with.
And one KBs that episode. If we had to write number 8.
If our listeners were rating our episodes on a KB scale.
Yeah.
Perfect.
One over
perfect episode.
It was like 140 to 149 IQ. Which we both have,
yes.
In case you're wondering.
We've,
we took
we
the
have,
test on women.com. Which is, I'm sure, where everybody goes to get their IQ tested.
I mean, women.com is where I go for all my information. I am a woman, so I go to women.com.
Well, I'm not sure what
IQ,
I was doing there.
Recipes, everything's on women.com.
Okay.
Should
we talk about this movie?
We should. I just want to say, we had no agree to disagree last week because it's kind of odd what people get mad about.
Yeah.
Nobody was mad about our analysis of Stand By Me. There were no Richard Dreyfuss stands coming in to get mad at you for putting him on your Tree of Evil.
And no Stephen King.
Yeah, no Stephen King stands.
So I think I just nailed the Stephen King thing.
Yeah.
That people hate him as much as I do.
People support Rob Reiner. They support mid-80s John Cusack. And they do not support Richard Dreyfuss or Stephen King. I think we produced a perfect
episode.
We spoke
for the people.
Nobody can argue a single point with. So
nope, nothing to argue in that.
So please do not go after Jim Carrey again in this episode.
I wasn't
going to get a bunch more
name.
Angry emails and tweets about Jim Carrey.
No, I'm not even mentioning his name again.
Yeah.
I know where the hot button is.
we know what it is now. Let's talk about this movie.
Okay, so just a brief overview.
Okay.
The little description is pretty accurate.
Yeah, it's the four friends.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And they grow up working class, and they're trying to decide, and they've like linked their lives together. They all work together at the AMP, and then when Mike got fired, they all quit together because they are linked together.
It is hard to hire and fire four guys at any one time. They will only go for jobs that are going to hire all four of them.
But there was a good day in Bloomington for some working class people as four openings happened at the AMP.
I know, that's a lot of openings at the AMP.
I know.
Yeah.
But Nancy stayed by Moocher even though he lost his job at the A&P and she was on her way to head cashier.
She did. I know.
Nancy was a cutie pie.
She married him.
She did marry Dutch.
Yeah.
They went Dutch on the $5 marriage
license.
Well,
they didn't go Dutch. She put $4 in and he put $1 in. That's not going Dutch. She paid for the majority of that marriage license.
I'm sorry, Moocher. I cannot defend
you. It was $5 to get married in 1979?
At the courthouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much does it cost to get married at the courthouse now? You don't have to get a blood test anymore, right?
I have no idea.
What is the blood test?
I have no idea.
You didn't have to get a blood test when you got married?
No. We just walked to the courthouse in Polk
County,
Wisconsin.
Well, it's like the Billy Bragg song, you know, about how he can't wait to get their blood test. It's a very romantic line in the history of music. Baby, let's get our blood test now.
Yep, I can't wait to get our blood test. So, baby, let's take our blood test now.
Yeah. That's a real mystery.
This is
going to
be the singing episode. This is the musical.
Really, this is the musical
Number
episode.
Number 9 is the musical
it
episode.
Is the Every show's got to have a musical episode. This is ours, I guess. It's all covers, though. There's no original music. Well, you adapted a song. You're like Aretha. You take a song and you make it your own.
I could write an original.
You could. In the next, like, 15 minutes.
I better think about this
over the
quickly.
Course of the recording, you're just going to go all quiet over there. I'll just talk about the movie as you're writing a song.
Well, and I think Sustainabutter is probably jealous and wants his own song.
He probably does. I know. Mm. Our real sponsor.
Okay, should we get to the movie? Those of you out
okay. there. I'm still just, it's not going Dutch if you pay for $4 of a marriage
okay,
license.
Okay, so the basic overview of the movie is the protagonist is Dave, the bicycle guy who...
I thought Dennis Quaid was going to be the protagonist at the beginning. He had some commanding singing at the very beginning.
He did.
A commanding presence throughout.
He did. He was telling them what was going to happen.
And like River Phoenix in the previous movie we watched, always had his pack of cigarettes up in his sleeve.
Mm-hmm. But he wasn't smoking because he wanted to stay in shape in case he got a call.
He just always
start.
Had a cigarette in his mouth, but he was never lighting up. Yeah,
correct.
That's true.
All right. Okay. So then the boys go about their merry way. And Dave, is pretending to be Italian and drives his dad. His dad says, I am filled with shame every time I see that boy.
Oh, God, yes. So the dad does not love that Dave is running around wearing his little bicycle shorts, kissing men on the cheek. And
shaving his legs.
Shaving his legs, singing Italian opera, living at home because that's what Italian families do.
Not having a job.
Because Italians are poor, but they're happy.
They are.
As Dave, the expert on Italy, tells us. Yeah. Dave's all into Italy and biking specifically, cycling. Dennis Quaid, Mike, is just mad about everything. Driving his terrible car around, trying to stir up trouble with the Indiana, the Bloomington College students.
Indiana University. Yep.
Yeah. So he's always trying to stir up trouble with the college students and their pink polos.
And Cyril is Cyril.
Well, he really went through something.
He
can point to the spot where he lost his interest in life.
When he lost all interest in life.
Yes, Dr. No-Nonsense's favorite moment of the movie.
Yeah, and it happened like 5 minutes into the movie.
she was ready to be done. It was a great movie. 5 minutes. It was a great short.
Oh, she laughed and laughed, repeated the line like 4 times.
And then Moocher, you know, he was trying to sell his house. His dad was out in Chicago trying to get a job, and he got married to Nancy, who probably made it to head cashier.
Probably did. Nancy was delightful.
She was. Super cutie.
And so the whole story then revolves around Dave's finding his identity, and then Dave's father and mother trying to find their relationship with him. And I think that's the gist of the movie.
Yes. And he partially does this by pretending to be Italian in order to romance one of the college girls.
Correct. Caterina.
Shockingly, if you lie to somebody about every aspect of your identity when you meet them, it doesn't tend to work out.
No, that was old school catfishing.
Yeah, it really was. It was face-to-face catfishing.
It really was.
Yeah. So, shockingly, she did not love that when she found out the truth.
No, she did
but
not.
But she was pretty good about it at the end, you know?
She
but
really was.
Not re-sparking that romance.
No.
No.
No, which is one of the things I liked about the movie immensely,
yeah.
was
yeah.
there was no super evil person. Because even the college guy that was kind of the snooty...
Rod. Could have been Chad. Could have been Tad or Troy or whatever. Yep. Classic.
It was a tool. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just a classic tool.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there were moments in the movie where he had realizations of the other people's humanness.
He was almost like, we could have had a movie about Rod, kind of, you know?
Oh,
like,
that's
what
one of our segments?
Who is the alternate perspective we want on this movie? What was this movie like for Rod?
Well, I want to know what this movie was like for Nancy.
Yeah.
She's the one I want to know.
What was up with Nancy's story?
I know.
She just popped in and out and like did mysterious things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to see the movie from Nancy's perspective.
I was thinking that we might have we were going to go into the store and see Nancy at work, and then we never did.
I know. That would have been a lovely scene.
Because we also didn't have any moment where like they must have known that Moocher got married.
Okay, well, it's one of my criticisms of the movie. Not that we're going to get right into criticisms, because I had seen this movie when it came out. I probably saw it in the cinema.
Yeah.
And then I saw it some years after, maybe went to the store and rented it at the local before Best Buy took over and, you know, became the John Locke libertarians of VHS and completely became the oligarchical family. And
oh, when there used to be like...
There used to be mom and pop.
Small business... Video rentals.
Yeah, and I think we went to the mom and pop shop and we rented Breaking Away, probably like in 84, 85.
In New England, where I went to college, the town still had two guys ran a video store. It was the greatest place. Every once in a while, they exist. Although the last Blockbuster in Alaska is closing. But back in the 80s, you rented this.
So I think I rented it. And so I hadn't seen it for some years. And It was delightful. It was super funny. I laughed and laughed and laughed. So if you think this is just going to be a criticism of it, it's really not. I only have a few criticisms. And one of the criticisms is exactly that, is that these scenes would happen, and then there was no follow-up to the scenes. You know, so they get in the big fight in the bowling alley, and then they just go on with their lives. And the Italians turn out to be jerks, the Italian bicycle racers, and it changes his life a little, but he just kind of goes on. The mom gets pregnant, things just kind of go on. Mucha gets married, things just kind of go on. You know, yeah. There's really no follow-up to any scene that happens.
Mike gets a terrible head injury and seems fine.
Almost drowns.
Yeah. Well, he's okay.
He's okay.
He's 18, well, you know.
19.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he flunked.
Yeah, I know. There were things where I was like, wait, what happened with that thing?
I know.
Yeah, with Nancy.
All kinds of things.
Nancy was a real drop threat in this movie. Yeah. No, I think that was
And so it's maybe like almost, maybe not even a criticism, because one of the things I liked about the movie, it just kind of moved on. Life just kind of moves on.
Like I one of the vignettes that I kind of liked that had no like introduction and no nothing that no conclusion to it either was him bicycling behind the truck, the Cinzano cigarette truck.
Yeah.
And it was like, do they know each other? How do they know?
Exactly.
Does he show up? Does he live there?
Yeah.
Like, no idea. But it was
tons of scenes.
But
like
it was
that.
A really like fun little scene. It was a great little vignette.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like Rod.
Uh huh.
And Katerina are dating, and then they both show up at the bowling alley, and she's with whatever his Italian name is, Dave.
And Rico.
And he's there with the Soch major. And so they're both on dates, and there's really no fallout from that.
I know. Is that how dating worked in the late 70s?
I'm in Indiana, I guess. So there's all kinds of things where things just happen. You go,
Were you dating somebody, but you'd also like go out with random Italian men who serenaded you?
Well, I think it's not so much dating. I think how bowling works.
Oh, okay. It was more about the bowling.
It's more about bowling.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a commentary on bowling. We're going to get a lot of calls about that.
Maybe Katerina.
Why are you dissing on bowling?
We're not.
Really? Bowling?
Big fans.
Bowling?
It helped Cyril's like stay uninjured in that fight with that bowling ball.
Oh, man. Cyril took on 9 guys.
He did.
Yeah.
With 1 bowling ball.
So anyway, so that's the gist of the movie.
Yes, and one of your criticisms of the movie.
Right.
But it's a light criticism.
It's a very light criticism, almost a likable criticism.
Yeah.
You know, because they didn't dwell on the aftermath of the fight.
You know, it's, do you think it's a theme of our boy movies again?
Well, so one of the themes of our boy movie that showed up in this very strongly was boys' relationship with nature. Because they go to the quarry.
The quarry was awesome.
The quarry was awesome.
That water was beautiful.
I know.
I want to swim in that quarry.
I swam in a quarry near the mom and pop video store in that small town where you went to school.
In New England, yes. How was your quarry swimming experience?
It was scary.
Yeah.
The water was dark and there were things lurking in that water.
Weird. This quarry, apparently quarries in Indiana have like perfect size.
They have like
perfect blue water.
Yeah, Mediterranean
blue. But they must have shot that somewhere. That's a real quarry, right?
In Bloomington, I guess.
Yeah, it must be, because they did shoot the whole thing. So we should take a road trip to Bloomington. Maybe instead of Trope Watch this week, we can tie back some threads to some of the other boy movies, since this rounds out our boy movie trilogy.
Well, I'm going to just finish my... Because it wasn't just the quarry.
Uh-huh.
Because when he first meets her and he falls in love with Katerina, then he goes for that bike ride out through the woods and the opera's playing and he's riding along and he's just riding through the trees and there's this beautiful backlit trees and he's just out in nature riding along being in love. You know, and so there were several scenes where he's in nature and he's like experiences his fullness, right? So not only the quarry, but there were others.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to round out the thread of boys seem to be at their most potent when they're in nature.
And, you know, going back to our first boy movie, The Kings of Summer, this is kind of another one where they're kind of in this, again, in the summer of their lives, right? We're getting boy movies that are inside of this age range, right? That Stand By Me was, they were the youngest that they were. And then Kings of Summer, they're kind of young teens, 14, 15 years old. And then these are kind of the end of that, right? They're about to hit that place where they can't really be boys swimming at the quarry anymore, right? They have, it's the end of that summer period that they're heading into responsibilities and like real adulthood now.
Yeah.
Right.
Cyril says.
Yeah. Hitting the end.
When you turn 18, you can vote and drink. What do you get to do when you're 19?
Well, and he did say, you know, if Mike heads out to Wyoming, he's still in his cavity-prone years. So got to take a toothbrush to Wyoming because he's still in his cavity-prone years. So Cyril recognizes that they're hitting the limits of that golden summer of their lives as boys. Because we're coming back around to nature. We're coming back around to summer. Again, we have a movie that's not taking place in school, unlike most of our girl movies so far. It's another summer outdoor young boy movies.
And they're dreading the coming of fall.
They are. Yeah, because they're going to actually have to
choose to get a job or go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other point that I'm going to bring back, which is kind of one of my themes, this is kind of my key theme.
Okay.
So should I bring it out now?
Yeah, let's talk about it now.
Really? Do we need to do some other stuff first before we go into our key themes?
Well, is there anything else in general? I got to say, I also found this movie to be delightful. I'd never seen it before. Delightful movie. Mm-hmm. Just like a ray of sunshine. I loved Dave. Oh, Dave just slayed me. You know, he's just like his sunniness and optimism. You know, it's the late 70s and he's kissing men on their cheeks and just throwing himself into things in a way that was just like Dave was, you know, he was not at all like our Joe Toy from Kings of Summer, who is a 14-year-old with all the world weariness and cynicism of his, you know, crotchety old father. Dave had none of that. Dave was open to the world. I loved it, you know, and the antithesis
he should
of
be
Mike,
tired
too.
And miserable.
Yeah.
I was tired and miserable when I was his age.
Yeah. You know, he's the antithesis of his dad in some ways. We'll come back around to this.
We will.
But in some ways, he's outwardly the antithesis of his father, who is miserable and crotchety and mad about everything. And Dave is this ray of sunshine who breezes through on, like, you know, a wave of bicycling and Italian operas. You know, just like this, just, yeah, he was like a little ray of sunshine in his love and his hope. I found him to be super delightful, you know, as I did with most of the characters in this movie. So I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I might, even, you know. It was not necessarily what I quite anticipated that it was going to be, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and yeah. I thought it held up really well.
It does.
It's 40 years old.
Yeah, and
it's really watchable.
There's nothing that I was like, oof, that's a dated thing.
Oh, there's
I mean,
one.
The shorts.
No. The gay guy in the bowling alley. That was the one glaring, what? So there was only that one.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, there really was no moment where I was like, ooh, this is not aged well at all.
No.
No. And I think that kind of speaks to the spirit of the movie, too.
I think so.
Yeah. And kind of what the movie was trying to say in a lot of some of the themes, maybe, of the movie. Yeah. It's funny to me that the breakout star of this movie was Dennis Quaid. Well, maybe not breakout star. All of them seem to have gone on to, many of those people have gone on to do a lot of work.
Yes.
But like
Daniel
recognizable.
Stern.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very recognizable.
Yeah. But I think of like broad mainstream film, you know, recognizability. It's probably Dennis Quaid.
Yeah. He's the them of the movie.
Oh, yeah. We should shout out another podcast here. I know. We shout out to our favorite podcast about celebrities. We should call in about the rest of these guys. And that's a reference. They're going to be like, what? Who's calling in about this 1979 movie?
We did call
movie?
In about Joel Courtney.
We did, and they did not respond.
Speaking of which.
Come on.
Joel, call us.
Come on, Joel.
We're pumping you on other podcasts.
We really are. I know. We called them.
We
called our favorite podcast about all the celebrity, about knowing all about the celebrities that you don't actually need to know. Who Weekly is a delightful podcast by Bobby Finger and Lindsay Weber. Two delightful people. Congrats on Bobby recently got married.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite names in all of podcasting.
Did he dare to ask?
Bobby Finger. It's a great name.
Did he dare?
I think he dared to ask.
I wonder if it was at a karaoke bar.
I hope. I think he is more creative than proposing with a Zales ring at a karaoke bar.
Anyway,
gay marriage is officially commercialized because there's Jared commercials about it now.
You can sell the American Jezebel clearly stated when you can get guys buying two rings.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. It's a genius thing
it's genius
that K Jewelers is doing now.
Or whoever it was. I can't remember.
I'm just throwing in as many references.
I've
thrown out a couple of them. Yeah.
Shane.
You got, you know, two men getting married, two rings.
Two diamond rings.
Two engagement rings, two wedding rings.
Yep.
Two ladies, two rings.
Yep.
I think I just wrote their new slogan.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Call me Zales.
Yeah.
You
should be in the
Who's
boardroom.
Our friend in the diamond business?
Tom Shane.
Shane. I almost forgot who my friend in the diamond business is.
Well, you know who I realize.
This is another local reference.
Name our real friend.
We won't. No.
No, because he really is our friend.
He is.
And it's best that he'd go unnamed.
Yes.
But you know who you are.
He's a listener.
I can only hope.
We're very popular in the 50-plus Indian American crowd.
Correct. Huge.
Huge.
Okay.
We're shouting out Who Weekly. Go listen to Who Weekly. You learn all about the celebrities you never need to know about. They go in and out of my brain. I've already forgotten all those Who's. Yes.
Okay.
But it's a
Sheena Kamini, though. What? Yeah. You haven't forgotten her.
That, she was a great one. Yes. They also have a great, speaking of it being our musical episode, they have a great song about the number one Who, Rita Ora, because tens of people want to know all about her. It's my favorite line in like all of podcasting. Tens of people want to know.
Okay.
It's basically us, right?
Yeah, basically. Okay, so anyway, we're coming back to him.
Okay.
Because he has one of the key lines that tracks us back to our other ones.
Okay.
This is what it's going to be. This is 20-year-old Mike, 30-year-old Mike, mean old man Mike. And so he's pretty much said what I've been saying in the other podcasts is when you get into that furrow, when you get into that rut that your father has created for you, you can't get out of it. And Mike literally says it. This is who I'm going to be. This is what you get. He can't get away from it. Sad.
Do you think the movie is saying that, though?
No.
I don't think it is either.
I know.
It's one of the things I really like about this movie.
Because that comes early in the movie. And then we have, like, my key scene, which I think is, because I can remember watching at the movies with Siskel and Ebert. And the scene they showed was the dad and the son.
At the university?
Yes, because after the son has his experience with the Italian vice-raking team, and he takes down all of the posters off of his wall, the dad says, you need to come with me, son.
Trope watch.
Yeah.
He has one disappointment, and he just takes apart everything.
Well, he held them so high.
I know. It makes sense. It makes sense in the context of the movie.
But he didn't give up bicycling.
No, he didn't.
He didn't give up his love of foreign countries.
Mm-mm.
He just switched.
Oh, I love Dave.
He just switched.
Mon Dieu, you have not seen La Tour de France.
Bonjour, papa.
Okay, yeah, so he has. So this is the scene that Siskel and Ebert had.
They showed this scene. I can remember watching, and they showed this scene.
Okay, when they were talking about this movie?
It's such a poignant scene.
It is.
Because the father's talking, and he says, you know, these buildings. We made these buildings. I cut these stones. I was a pretty doggone good stone cutter back in the days. And we were proud. And the buildings went up. But when the buildings went up, they were too good for us. Nobody said it to us. We just knew it. And so it's an interesting thing, right, that he's like saying, our lot is not here. And so he's basically saying what Mike said, you know, you're in your rut. This is your rut. You can't get out of it. And then he sits on the bench. And then the boy said, yeah, but I'm proud to be a cutter. And the dad said, I'm a cutter. You're not a cutter. I'm a cutter. And then he says that he has these high expectations for his son.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember the exact line that he says.
Yeah, I don't think I wrote it down either.
Because he said, well, it was good enough for you, Dad. And he says, yeah, it was good enough for me. It's not good enough for you. So he's an incredible dad.
He is.
He has said to his son, you're not going to get stuck in the rut that I got stuck in. I expect you to go to college. Yeah, and he even says, well, you know, your mom said, well, your mom's probably worried that we're not home. We should go back. And so he doesn't push it off on the mom.
Mm-mm.
He knows enough to stop himself and say, it's got to come from me too. He is a great dad figure.
Yeah, he is.
So that's the anti-trope watch. There's no dead parents. There's no missing parents. There's no horrible parents. They're actually good parents. Even Moocher's dad, who's in Chicago looking for work.
Even Katarina's parents.
Yes.
You know, that she has no she doesn't really have any appreciation for them. But then when Enrico is telling her to let you know that her parents are at home looking at her picture every night, then she decides, I should have a better relationship with my parents.
Katarina.
Yeah, but she decides to have a better relationship with her parents.
She does, yeah.
Yeah, and we don't have any sense that they're actually bad parents.
No.
Yeah, and that suddenly when he's like, oh, it's not really that cool to just hate your parents,
yeah,
she decides to change that relationship with him, which is great.
Troll.
Yeah, you've got great parents in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great relationship.
There are lots of good relationships.
Except...
aside the face-to-face catfishing situation.
Right, and Cyril and his dad.
Yeah.
But we're saving that for best line of the movie.
I think so.
And so I think this movie actually is sane.
Mm-hmm.
But the dad had to come a long ways. You could see the dad.
Yeah.
You know, so who's in the liminal space? The son or the dad?
Yeah, they're both in liminal spaces.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And even the dad says early on when the mom suggests that the son goes to college, and he goes, well, college, you know, I didn't go to college. What do you see? Think he's better than me?
Yeah.
Right? And then later on, she says, well, do you want him to sell cars like you? You know, is that better? And he's like, oh, that's not even good enough for me. You know, he's better than selling cars, but he still does it. And he doesn't want his son to be better than him. And he says that at the beginning of the movie. And then he comes around to it, you know, or that was just an expression of something that's still true for him, you know, that he still does, you know, not want his son to feel better than him, you know, or that was like, I don't know.
No, because even at the end, when he drives over to see the end of the race, he wasn't going to go, but he changes his relationship with his son.
Yeah.
He goes to support him.
Yeah.
You know, so he's working hard.
He is.
That dad is working really hard.
He eats all that ID food.
It almost kills him. He's working so hard.
It really does.
It literally almost kills him to move from who he was to who he's going to be.
But he does it.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, he's riding his bike.
I know. Getting his exercise in to get his heart going.
Because he's got to, because he's got a baby on the way.
He's got a baby on the way. Which is really a what?
I put so many question marks after that. The mom is pregnant.
your mom and I were visiting my mom today, and I said, you know, it's how it works. You just cook some Italian food, you put on some opera, and bang, you got a baby in the oven. You got a bun in the oven. That's all it takes. Doesn't matter how old you are.
Oh my goodness. Italian
food, some candlelight, and opera. And there's a baby.
Oh, my God.
So be careful out there, listeners.
Now you know. This is an educational podcast as well.
Yeah. So safe dining and music listening, please.
So do you want to come now that we've had a little bit more of a serious talk about the movie? Do you want to come around to key scenes in this movie? That scene I really liked of the dad at the stone at the quarry or at where they're cutting the stones, and you see almost like you see that he was really good at it, right? I was worried when he was stepping on all that slippery rock and going in there. I was like, oh no, is he gonna be okay? And of course he was, because he was really good at that. Man, I really liked that scene. It was almost one of those ones where it's like, well, then they don't talk about him going to the quarry. We don't really know why he was there.
I thought he went there to get his son a job.
I thought he did too.
And then he doesn't.
Yeah. Then he just, you know, hammers in some...
wedges.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a cool scene too to see, because, you know, they are setting up. I love that there was a real, like, you know, at first I was like, why are they called cutters? And then I realized, oh, they literally are stone cutters, right? Like how much it's like shaped, you know, kind of talking about nature, right? Like that these men and their work was shaped by the environment, right? That like the quarry that their sons are swimming in was shaped by them, right? And the dad does talk about that, right? That, you know, all that he has to show for 20 years of work is like a hole in the ground that they go swimming in now, right? But yeah, it really was like, it was pretty incredible to see the like industrial scale. Like I've never thought about how you cut stone, right? Like the machines that are involved, how industrial and intense that work is. Like it was really cool to see what that actually looked like, what that work was. And then to see the dad in that situation of like, that's really what he was good at. He's not at ease in his used car sales lot. He does it, but it's not good enough for him. It's not what he wants to do. and just like how expansive he was and how confident he was in that situation. I thought that was super cool. And that scene of him kind of in his element there, and then the scene of the mom with her passport, which was a really sweet, sweet scene.
Yeah.
That was like kind of melancholy, but also it was this beautiful, you know, because he, you know, Dave has this scene with his father, right? Where his father is pushing him out of the liminal space into this next thing, telling him what he needs to do. And then his mom reflected kind of that optimism and like that openness that Dave has in the fact that she has that passport with her all the time.
I thought she was also saying, here's this unfulfilled dream.
Yes.
That I carry mm-hmm. with me every
yes,
day.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why there's that level of melancholy to it.
Right.
That she's, you know, she has like, you know, a lot of good things going for her, right? That she's not saying, I hate my life, I want to run away all the time. But here's this thing that, yeah, that is this unfulfilled dream of mine. That is this, you know, I carry it with me every day, all the time, because one day I'm going to need it at the store when they ask for my ID, right? When Nancy's asking, you know? Yeah. But the fact that she had that passport and that she has that dream. And that's why she's, I think, so supportive of Dave and all of his crazy love of all these other countries, because that's what he gets from her.
Yeah. Very nice.
I was just, it was such a sweet and kind of bittersweet scene. Because I don't think the mom's ever going to use the passport for anything, but she has it.
Yeah.
Like, there's that possibility for it, which is sweet, but also kind of sad at the same time. So I really liked that scene,
too. It was
too.
A lovely scene. And mm-hmm. also how I like movies that respect the audience. So she didn't have to say, this was my dream and I never fulfilled my dream.
Don't be like me. Yeah.
Don't be like, you know. They trusted that we would figure out. And so I did like that, too.
It was really nice.
Yeah. That was a beautiful scene.
You're yeah. Right. So any other things that you wanted to talk about? I found, because I had not seen it before, the bicycle race scene to be very thrilling. When they're taping his feet to it.
The little 500.
The boys stepped up. You know, that was, I loved that. So that was like pure enjoyment, right? I was in it the whole time. Yeah. I was invested in the scene. Moocher got on the bike, Mike got on the bike, Cyril got on the bike, and then Dave did it. You know, he won. You know, I wasn't sure that he would.
I know.
But he did.
He did.
It was a fun end to the movie.
It was very fun.
Too. So that did wrap up, right? They did bring that back around. Some things were just random vignettes that just got dropped. But they did bring it back around, back from those dastardly Italians.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why he dropped it for France. He dropped Italy for France.
Well, no, it was the French exchange student.
But, you know, France makes sense for a bicyclist.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
A cyclist probably is what they're called. I don't know. Call in bicycle enthusiasts.
No, don't call in.
Send an email to AmericanJezebel.GreaseyRapidian@gmail.com or tweet at us at AmericanJezebel.
Or
follow us on our Instagram, American_Jezebel.
That was pretty quick. You had to be paying attention to get those in.
Yeah.
But you can read it in the description.
Yeah.
And we're always happy to have people contact us.
Yeah. Anything else?
Well, how about some music and we pitch a car since we're talking bicycles?
Oh, yeah. Let's pivot from bicycles.
Okay. Some music?
We have to introduce that there's going to be music every time.
Do we?
I don't know if we keep doing that. It's just so we can put the music in underneath. Yeah. So, instead of a bicycle, you think that you're not going to pitch a bicycle to the anarcho-syndicalist based on this episode?
No, I'm not pitching a bicycle.
Okay.
I'm actually going to pitch a car.
Okay.
And so we've had feedback from the anarcho-syndicalist that I've been pitching cars that he doesn't think are very reliable.
Yes.
And so I'm still pitching orphan brands. So we're going with Plymouth, which is now an orphan brand. Which
you
I'm
are
so
not
sad.
Known for pitching reliable vehicles or owning more recently, but in the past you've not necessarily prioritized reliability. Has not been maybe your top priority in cars.
Well, it's that same thing, the dilemma we're talking about, this polarity in America, and there's a polarity in car ownership. Some people prefer function over form.
Dr. No Nonsense has a different perspective on
she prefers
a
function.
Different rank
she prefers
in her.
Function I prefer form.
You have an aesthetic a perspective on cars.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I cannot wait to watch American Graffiti again. because it's all about the cars.
You're really teasing it. It's not coming for a while.
It's not coming for a while, but just hang in with us because yes. It's going to be a love fest.
Please do.
I'm buying me a Pharaoh's jacket.
2 hour special.
If you want to buy, if anybody out there wants to provide a Christmas present for me, go on Aramark, one of our future sponsors.
Yes.
They provide Ike jackets with customized writing on the back. You could get an American Jezebel's jacket, but you would have to belong to the American Jezebel's gang.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to write to the American Jezebel to find out what it takes to get in.
Oh, there's some strict initiation procedures.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to belong to the Pharaohs, so I might get me a little black.
Well, you know, everybody wants to be a Pharaoh.
Everybody wants to be a Pharaoh.
We're just teasing our future episode on American Graffiti, where it's just the Greasy Rapidian quoting verbatim the entire movie, which he probably could pretty closely do.
Oh my god!
Or at least a while ago, you could have. So you want to pitch a car to the anarcho-syndicalist?
I'd like to pitch him a car.
Okay, he wants more reliability.
More reliability.
Than the cars you've been pitching.
And so I'm going with reliability because when prior to the birth of the American Jezebel. Dr. No Nonsense and I did not own a car. And so she said to me, we need a car so when we go to the hospital, we can drive to the hospital. I said, I got it covered.
That's why she's doing Dr. No Nonsense.
Yep, I got it covered. I'll get us a car. So I went out with my $1,000 budget, shopping for a car in the Midwest where rust is king. And I bought us a 1962 Dodge Dart. She thought she was going to have the baby in the backseat on the way to the hospital. She was not happy about my purchase.
Shocking.
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 It looked like the Batmobile. Unbelievable.
So, again, aesthetics over reliability.
Correct.
Okay.
So, yeah, Mark Cohen has that song, The Silver Thunderbird, and he says, you know, look just like the Batmobile. Thunderbird does not look like the Batmobile. 62 Dodge Dart does. But the Dodge is not an orphan brand, so I can't pitch him the Dodge Dart.
Also not on high on the reliability scale.
No, it's seriously high on the reliability. If it could survive the rusty years in Minnesota, imagine if you bought a California one. I'm going with the Plymouth Valiant, which is the same body styling. Not exactly the same body style, but same body styling. And this is Virgil Exner, was the chief stylist of Plymouth, Dodge, and Chrysler, and he lost his job over these cars. People hated them so much. I think they're super groovy. Push-button transmission, super reliable transmissions. Oftentimes, people will put them in drag cars so they can just shift gears by pushing the button. Back in the day, they did. Not anymore. It's super fancy
now. You think the anarcho-syndicalist is going to be racing his car?
No, but it's a reliable transmission.
Okay.
And if we get him into the 225 slant six... They're ridiculously reliable engines. They just go and go, gigantic main bearings in them. And people use them, often use these engines for demolition derbies. And then they just pull the radiator out and they connect the hose and they fill the engine block with oil. And the car will just run and run and run with no coolant until you break something else. And so they're just like bulletproof, these engines. It's got the two things he needs, like a ridiculously solid transmission and a just bulletproof engine. And you could get, I just did a little research for him, could get a wagon, which is super cool. You could get a wagon in pristine condition for $18,000, and that might be beyond the anarcho-syndicalist budget. But he could get like an original 24,000 miles for $13,000. That's a great car.
And it's a perfect marriage of reliability and aesthetics.
It is.
Mm.
It is.
Okay.
You got to have quirky aesthetics because they do look like the Batmobile.
Okay.
But
aesthetically interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
People will know you're coming down the road when you come down the road. They won't go, is that another Subaru?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, future sponsor. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not another. Mm-mm. You go, wow, that is some kind of vintage crazy car.
Hmm.
You make a statement when you drive this.
All right. I'm sold.
I'm sold too. I might buy another one.
Hey, that was a really successful pitch. I'm really sold on that. I didn't understand anything when you were talking about the coolant and the oil and the engine and stuff like that, but I'm still sold. All right. Should we talk about the star by far of the movie?
And who goes first? You do.
I go first on this one. Okay. We, in our extensive planning of this episode, just like we do
every time,
just tons of planning. As you can tell, why we're called Talking Nonsense. We do all kinds of planning for these. We argued about, we had a little bit of a tug of war over the Star by Far. So I gracefully stepped aside, left the field open for you to race to through to the end.
Thank you.
And I chose another Star by Far than the hotly contested one. I'm going to go with the mom.
The mom.
The mom is my star by far. I don't even know what her name was. Did she have, did we know her name?
I think her name Cheryl. Was Barbara. I was going with Barbara.
What, you know, it's the late 70s. How old was she? 50 and she's having a baby. How old was that mom?
Barbara. Well,
yeah, Barbara was 45.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Barbara is my star by far. Not just based on the incredibly great scene with her in the passport, which I loved, but she was also so gently supportive of her teenage son's wild and crazy notions. You know, he would yell things at her in Italian, and then just and then she would just say, "Oh, Dave, try not be- to become Catholic on us." she was just, you know, just a lovely, you know, we're talking about Star by Far is the side character who is just supporting the main character. The side character makes the main character shine. You know, she carried a little thermos in her little folding chair. She had a, was, she was pregnant. She was carrying a thermos and a folding chair to a fake, like mini bicycle race.
Not fake. It was the little 500.
I thought it was a fake version of a bigger race, but it was the bicycle.
It was the bicycle version of the Indianapolis
500. It was very real. It was very, the stakes were very real.
It is truly real because the rider actually participated, I think, in his, because he grew up in, I think he grew up outside of Bloomington.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that mom, she was there for Dave. You know, she advocated for him with the dad. She was also, you know, she wanted a big family. She's having another baby at 50. The mom was making it happen. So the mom, for her beautiful support of Dave, just slightly chiding him not to go too far. You know, she was singing that opera while she was scrubbing the floor. Decided to have another baby. Made it happen. The mom is my star by far.
There was that really lovely scene when he's devastated by the Italians. And he comes home and his dad's just out of bed after having the heart attack. And he's like, "Oh, Dad." And he just leans on him and starts crying. And then he's just hugging him and he's kind of awkwardly patting him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's on the floor and she's just crying that her boys are that way together.
Mm-hmm.
She was lovely.
The mom was great. Yeah. Star. Star. A star by far.
My All star right. by far. Because again, he's just supporting his friend, making him, you know.
He got beat up.
He did. I mean.
So I'm not trying to steal your thunder.
No, but, you know, he had the guitar that he didn't learn to play to make his father happy because his father enjoyed his failings.
Who was your star by far?
That would be Cyril.
Oh, Cyril.
he
just
had
all
so
arms
many.
And legs and nose, man. Just a gangly, supportive friend.
Oh, he was awesome.
Ah.
Just awesome.
Yeah.
So many good lines.
So supportive. So many good lines.
So many good lines.
Oh, man. Cyril was great. I wrote down so many. Even Cyril's dad seemed to have been a Cyril because the dad says, well, you know, we're all really good stonecutters. Well, Cyril's dad, not so much.
Well, yeah. Cyril's dad.
Oh.
But no, he picks up the guitar and he learns to play the guitar for Dave. Not only did he learn to, he got it. He actually looked like he was playing. Unlike other people we've seen in other movies who are not playing.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like he was actually playing the guitar, you know, and he's singing along with Dave when they're, you know, and he stays.
His pickup line was great, too.
What's your major?
He respects these women's minds.
He does.
He does. Sociology, that's a great major.
He has the best line by far because he goes and supports his buddy Dave. He takes the test with him. Then he learns to play the opera song. And then he goes with him to serenade Katarina. And then he serenades and he stays afterwards and he gets beat up. And the next day, Mike is really mad. "We're going to go find him. What do they look like?" He said, "I don't know. It was dark. Come on. Come on. Can you recognize him?" He said, "It was dark. All I know is they were all wearing Brut and reeked of Lavoris."
Oh, he had so many good lines. I've already quoted some of my favorites of him.
Oh, he was incredible.
Yeah.
Star by far.
So many good ones. We've quoted so many.
He brought levity to the movie.
He did.
All the time.
Also,
get out of our quarry. Also, this is our quarry.
Why, Dolores? Why? I hear they're married now.
See what I saved you from? Yeah, you saved me from a life where I was interested in it.
And I would like to shout out a special mention to the cat.
Jake?
Fellini.
Jake? That's my cat.
That was one of my favorite lines from the dad. That's my damn cat. Come on, Fellini. His name is Jake. I think it's one of the best use of human names for a cat. The fact that the dad named the cat Jake. His cat is Jake and his son is Dave. Dave and Jake, the two boys. Was a good cat actor.
He was a great cat actor.
Yeah. He had a really expressive little face.
And he ran when Cyril said, I'll make the cat gut sing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Should we rate this movie?
Yeah, did we need anything? Oh, we need to talk about what we watched before we watched this.
Oh, yeah. Music?
We need to start cueing like our invisible engineer that's not here. What did you watch before you watched this movie?
I watched the same thing you watched before.
I know.
We went to the picture show. We went to the cinema.
There was break. We all went to an afternoon showing.
We did. And we watched the Front Runner.
We did.
A retelling of the Gary Hart 88 campaign for president. And so I have to honestly say, I did like the movie a lot, but it didn't influence me in my watching of Breaking Away.
I don't think it influenced me in my watching of Breaking Away either. It actually would have been, it's not a liminal space movie, really. Or if it was, we would have more disagreements about this movie. Because you liked the movie a lot more than I did.
I know.
Yeah.
I did.
I kind of had my arms crossed during the last little bit of the movie. Brow furrowed. I thought it was an interesting movie, but I did not really like it a lot.
I liked it way more than you. This might have been our biggest disagreement ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know.
Ever.
Ever. We've never disagreed more than we did on
the Front Runner. Yeah. So I don't think that it really influenced
me. No, it was not influential.
You know, and I'm always watching other things. I'm still trying to finish Sabrina the Teenage Witch, the new Sabrina.
Well, I'm watching the Great British
Baking
Show.
Slowly, yeah. And I'm also watching a CW show that I will not mention because it's a kind of guilty pleasure movie. But it has kind of a similar joy to it that Breaking Away did. So I still don't think it influenced me, but it's carrying me along in these winter days on an optimistic, joyful kind of journey, which is nice.
Well, in my quest for non-monetized sport, I've been watching Nick A. 30 doing some Fortnite tournaments. But it seems pretty heavily monetized, so it will not make this segment. Sorry. Sorry, Nikki.
All right. Should we rate this movie?
Let's rate. I wrote
Who's
mine down.
Who's rating it first?
Well, I believe you are the odd person.
Oh, I am. So it's my turn.
It is your turn.
Okay. So I really found this movie to be delightful. But I don't know. And I think that there were, you know, a lot of the key scenes that we talked about. I thought they were, you know, and I loved a lot of things that was happening in this movie. But... And I would rewatch this movie at some point, but I don't think that I will carry this movie with me as much as maybe some of the other ones. I'm not. It's not going to make my Island 5. I don't think. But I did really enjoy this movie, particularly Dave. I still think face-to-face catfishing was a bad idea. I'm just going to put it out there for everybody.
Yeah, don't do it.
Don't expect a relationship to last if it's based entirely on lies.
No, do it.
Yeah, it's a hard one to sell. But I found this movie to be extremely delightful. It's the movie that I needed right now. Just a ray of sunshine. I was so happy at the triumph of all of them coming together. Right? I really liked this movie. So
KBs?
Yes. I gave this movie... 41,634 KBs. 34 is a shout out to their team number.
Oh, nicely done.
Yeah.
I almost gave it a shout out to the year it was made, 1979.
What did you give this movie?
Well, so I like this movie a lot. And this is my third viewing of it. And I would say that if you had to like put together like a top 100 to cull an Island 5 from, I might put this in the 100.
Yeah.
This is a watchable movie.
We need to come back around to something.
Okay, this is a highly watchable movie. And so you could watch this again and again and again and again. Because it's just pretty lovely. And so I like that aspect of it. And so even when you say, this movie won't stick with me, it probably won't stick with me a whole lot. I like that they changed that the father was helping the son get out of the rut. I really like that. That was a powerful statement, you know, compared to the other ones. And so I like that. I like that there were good parents in it. It's always good to see some good parents. Shout out to Easy A. Best parents ever. I'm going to be Stanley Tucci in Easy A. That's the father I want to be. Anyway. And so I like the movie a lot. And so no, I didn't rate it in terms of, because like To All the Boys I've Loved Before, not a lot sticks with you. But it's just a really fun movie to watch.
Near perfect film.
Yeah. And you could watch it again and again and again. So I rated it on the same way that I rated that. Because like with The Spectacular Now, I thought there were some serious themes. And that movie was working hard. You know, and so I liked that movie for how hard it worked, and so I gave it a pretty high rating. It's not one I could watch a lot.
Mm-mm.
This one, I'm going to rate really close to that one.
Okay.
So I gave it 76,421. Because
nice.
It was very, very watchable.
The other thing that I'm thinking about now that I wanted to come back to, that we've been talking about, this is rounding out our boy trilogy, right? And so I rated this the highest of any of our boy trilogy movies. And, you know, again, coming back to that idea that we ask a lot, that I ask a lot about these movies, who is this movie for? Or if you're a boy watching this movie, or as a father, or as me, again, a daughter who, again, has never been a teenage boy, what do you take away from this movie? And I think you take away a lot of really good things from this movie about what it is to be a man. Again, about the father who changes for his son, right? I think there's a lot of really positive you know, we had a couple of these other two movies where we had some much darker versions of what manhood is. And I think this is a really positive portrayal of manhood that's not, you know, it's not that you aren't, that they aren't men, but they're different versions of what it could mean to be a man. And I really liked that about it.
Very well said.
Yeah.
The expert has delivered again.
I just want to come back with this because this transitions into our next episode. We're coming from a movie.
I was feeling so good.
Where,
I was all warm and fuzzy.
You had the sunshine of Dave in your heart.
I did.
Breaking away, we have this beautiful vision of masculinity.
Of what it can be.
Oh,
how a man gets older and can
still. Free and joyful masculinity.
Love his life, love his wife, be happy with his family.
Which, you know, not. Not in a simplistic way.
No, a very complicated man. That boy caused him great shame every day.
Almost killed him. Almost killed him.
Yep. He's not ever going to get a job because he's good for nothing. I mean, he was not kind to that boy.
No.
But he came around.
And he loves him.
He does.
And he loves his wife and his cat.
Yep. He does.
Yeah. So
a very complex look at what it means to age as a man.
Yeah.
And so it was just lovely. And we're going to go from that to the
hold that sunshine of Dave and the dad in your heart, because now we're shifting to old man Mike.
This is going to be
or more like maybe old man middle-aged Rod.
Yes.
Yeah. This is middle-aged Rod here. So next episode.
what was the dad that was so this is F the prom dad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Which has not made it into our list so far. Another Netflix original starring our boy.
Joel Courtney, call
Joel,
us.
Call. yeah. God, okay.
So it's a triptych. It's a Hieronymus Bosch.
So we didn't want to do the extended 6 weeks of this trilogy because we couldn't do it. We couldn't talk about a single movie for each of these for an hour every week.
No.
So we're going to compress it down. We're going to put the pain, localize the pain here. And so we're going to do a triptych, three movies. So you can space them out, listeners, and watch all three, or maybe check in with one that you haven't thought about for a while. Because I think there might be some hot takes on this one. So we're going to do a triptych. We're calling it Creep Week. So in 2 weeks, join us for American Beauty, Mr. Holland's Opus, and Election.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for me. This is going to be a hard 2 weeks. Putting those.
Are we watching all three like right in a row?
Marathon
them?
I think we should.
Because it's going to be hard to spread those out.
It's going to be hard to come back day two and fire up a next one.
Yeah. And another podcast shout out.
Okay.
Which, one that I maybe have already referenced before. Another podcast shout out is, the two Canadian comedians who are just the most delightful ladies. I love them so much. And they have a podcast called I Hate It, But I Love It. And they discuss movies, TV shows, all kinds of things. I highly recommend the Riverdale episode if you are someone who's ever watched Riverdale, because I think they have a very correct read on what Riverdale is. Bananas garbage that's sometimes like a fun bananas garbage to watch. And they did an episode on American Beauty that I think we'll probably reference. I will probably reference back to you in that episode, in our new episode.
All right, then.
All
right. So before we close out, so in 2 weeks, Creep Week.
Creep Week.
Watch 1, 2, 3, or zero.
Or
if
none.
You've seen them before, don't watch them again for us.
Uh-uh.
You know, just listen and
look at the Wikipedia page, you know? Just refresh your brain a little bit.
I wouldn't even go there because there might be still some of that nonsense floating around that we're going to debunk in our next episode.
Yeah. This is going to be fire next episode.
It is.
Today, this
there's not enough Tony Schiavone in the world to help.
Today
this
was sunshine, the summer of our lives.
Yeah. And it's going to be
blistering winter next week.
Sackcloth and ashes and brimstone and fire. It's just going
to
be
like
brutal.
Feel that sting of that winter wind. Now is the winter of our discontent.
Oh my gosh. So we'd like to thank our sponsor.
Yeah. That's a great transition. Our sponsors love us.
Sustainabutter.
Again, he still doesn't listen.
No, but still he's making it happen.
He is.
Putting out the delicious, delicate for the digestion, nutritious, nutty nutrition. I don't know. I don't even. We're so
something
committed
like
to our
that.
Sponsors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does great work. Support small businesses.
So thank you for continuing to sponsor us, Sustainabutter.
Thank you, Sustainabutter.
And Kevin McLeod, we shouted you out once before, but you're making it happen on the music for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then join us in 2 weeks, Creep Week.
We're going to have to put some creepy music here.
Oh,
my
gosh. Yeah.
We can't have that delightful little, you know, twangy banjo here.
No,
we got to have.
It's going to be the dystopic ad of the company we won't name.
Yeah. Go online and look that up.
Yeah.
Holiday ad for a large retailer.
Large online retailer.
Mm-hmm. With the Captain America Winter Soldier theme put over it. Turns it into a nightmare scenario. It's great.
We might have to
I'll
do
link
that.
It on Twitter, maybe.
Yeah. So Kevin McLeod, if you got some creepy music you're working on, just tag it. No Nonsense Creep Week. All right. See you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for talking nonsense.
Thanks for talking nonsense.